Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The San Antonio Water System is considering a bet, a big bet, that the drought is not going to go away and that it's going to get a lot worse. SAWS is negotiating a multi-billion dollar contract to pipe in 16 billion gallons of water a year down to San Antonio. The city council is going to have to sign off on that deal, but there will be a lot of unanswered questions and some big risks that should be explored long before they take that vote. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. What do you think about the Vista Ridge Pipeline deal? 210-614-8980. And our guest this half hour is Amy Hardberger. She's a professor of law at St. Mary's University and the Mayor Castro's appointee to the SAWS Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. And Amy, welcome back to The Source.
Thanks for having me back.
So where are we right now in the process with this contract?
Well, it's a little hard to know because most of this has happened somewhat behind closed doors, but they have, SAWS has opened the negotiations to the public. There have been, I believe, three meetings and another one this week. And so we're still, and those are negotiating meetings between SAWS and the groundwater purveyor, which is, I believe, a partnership between Abengoa and a company called Blue Source. So the contract has not been finalized. Once it is, and they're hoping that it will be by September, it will get passed by the SAWS board and then go to council. And council actually doesn't need to approve it, but because of the size of the contract, council has sort of asked for a little bit more input than you would normally see for a water supply project like this.
And when you say the size of the contract is $3 billion?
That's the
over
number.
30
I,
years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 50,000 acre feet, which is, depending on what you're looking at, about a 20 to a 25% of what we're using now in a year. And yes, $3 billion is the number I've seen. I've not seen the contract, but that's the number I've seen floated around.
And so this would be a game changer for SAWS's economic model.
Absolutely. There are a lot of concerns about sort of what this might mean for the SAWS model, because this is a take-or-pay contract. Assuming the water shows up, we would have to pay for it.
We would have to take it. If it's there to take, we have to take it.
That is my understanding. Again, they have not released the contract, but that is my understanding of what the contract will have. And so if we don't need all of that water, that means that we would have to find a way, a buyer, to sell it to, or we would have to use it ourselves. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at that market model. But one of the things that I think is important to recognize is essentially we're going to feel obligated to use that water first. If we don't need what we're using now, plus the additional 50,000 acre feet, we would want to sell this first to our own ratepayers. Economically, that would make the most sense, and not necessarily sell the cheaper, older water that we've had for a long time, including some Edwards permits that we got for free. And one of the other really important economic things to think about here is that, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit more later, is there's going to be a significant rate increase associated with this water. And so one of my concerns is that you're going to see a behavior shift for things like lawns when people start seeing these larger bills, and people essentially are going to use less, that this price tag for all this new water is essentially going to do the reverse. Instead of supplying all our needs will actually reduce because people will use less. And that just leaves us with more we have to sell.
So I'm trying to get an idea of how this works with this must take contract. So it's as if I got a contract for a keg of beer a week for the next 30 years. And I figure I got a lot of friends and I could sell them beer and we're all going to have need a lot of beer. And I can do it this way and make sure I never run out of beer. But it turns out I don't need that much beer, and there's other beer that's out there that's actually a lot cheaper, and so the kegs keep showing up. I can't say no, and I got to keep paying for them, and pretty soon I go broke, and I have a lot of beer in my hands. Is that one way of looking at this thing?
It is one way of looking at it. I would add two little parts to that. One is right when you were purchasing this contract for your kegs, you thought in your mind, well, I don't necessarily need that much, but I might a few years from now, so I'm going to go ahead and sign up now because the price is good.
Because I'm thinking that there's going to be this beer drought that's
going
to last
forever.
Yeah, you're
worried about we're alarming half of San Antonio with this. There's no beer drought. But yes, assuming that you think there's going to be a beer drought, so you're thinking you're doing something that's really economically smart. You have a lot of friends that are beer drinkers. You think, okay, if I don't drink at all, I'll just sell it to them. And lo and behold, they don't want to buy it. Now, let me add another layer on top of that, and that is when you sign that contract, you've actually been trying to cut back drinking beer, not maximize, right? Because we've been trying to conserve water. And so there's another real concern about when net beer starts coming, those thoughts of, well, I really, you know, I've spent years trying to drink less, you might want to start drinking more because you don't want it to back up. And so, you know, there's a real question of, from an economic perspective, I have no doubt that SAWS in their heart intends to continue the conservation program, but there is some real economic issues when you have to sell water that continues to show up. Conservation suddenly becomes a little bit of a lesser priority.
So they're in the business, becoming the business of pushing water on people.
Right.
And so... you talked about a rate increase, and how much of a rate increase would that be?
Well, this is one of the many things that we don't really know. I mean, one of my real sort of concerns on this project has been sort of the lack of transparency and the lack of real opportunity for public participation and comment. I do applaud SAWS that they've opened the negotiations. But basically, if you go to those, you're sitting in the back room just listening in. That's very different than when they did the public water management plan rollout, where people could see a full slideshow with the rate increases, see what the water supplies are, and sort of comment on that. I still have my fingers crossed that that's going to happen, but there's a very short time between when SAWS board is supposed to vote on it and when city council is supposed to vote on it. And I've heard numbers just for this one supply project, 15% increase right off the bat. I can't attest to that because I don't know it's true. But we need to look at this cumulatively because we have other rate increases that we know are coming from other water supply projects, as well as all the wastewater fixes we have to do for EPA. So I think that the public really needs to see from SAWS a cumulative projection of what the rate increases are going to look like with all of these together. Is it going to be a doubling in 5 years? I have no idea.
So the price tag, SAWS is buying the $2,000 per acre foot of water under this deal, and that's more than 10 times the wholesale cost of water that Austin pays for.
That's true. 2,000 is a high number. From what I've seen, it's not out of the ordinary, even for something like brackish and other. I mean, the old water is definitely cheaper. So as a new supply, it is on the higher end, but it's not astronomical. What makes it so expensive is the quantity that you're purchasing up front under this take-or-pay contract. That's what makes the bottom line so large.
So is it the problem that we're working in an atmosphere of fear right now? I mean, we're stage four. It's dry. We're in a drought. We're talking about climate change. And if we don't snap up this water, someone else will. And then we're going to be, just regretting that we didn't do it.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. I mean, I think that it's part of it is fear that we see water going away and there is a real turn to groundwater.
And Texas continues to grow.
It does. And I mean, you know, I would say you said when you were starting out that a lot of this has to do with climate change and drought. It absolutely does. But you have to pair that with growth. I mean, the growth projections for Texas and San Antonio are really staggering. And, you know, a lot of people really feel like we should be a buyer now, and then we could be a seller later, as opposed to trying to be a buyer later.
But that is a risky business.
Well, if you go to a buy one, get one, half one off, that's a good deal only if you need two of something. If you don't need two, you're paying too much.
Okay, we're talking about the water deal that is being floated before SAWS right now, the Vista Ridge Pipeline deal. My guest is Amy Hardberger, professor of law at St. Mary's University, and Mayor Castro's appointee to the SAWS Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. If you've got questions or comments about this deal, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX, and we're going to be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a multi-billion dollar bet that SAWS is looking at. They're thinking the drought's going to continue, it's going to get worse, we're going to need water. And one way to deal with that is to lay down the chips on the Vista Ridge pipeline deal. $3 billion, 16 billion gallons of water a year for San Antonio. But if they're wrong, if San Antonio doesn't need that much water, what are we going to do with all of that water? We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's get some of our callers on the air. Hugh has called in. Hugh, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I live in an apartment. I don't get to adjust my water bill. My water bill gets paid in Houston, and they will adjust my rent accordingly and in accordance with comparable rents, and that's going to go up and up again.
So you're going to pay one way or the other?
Well, not only that, it's going to be the least efficient, because remember, it's comparable rents and whatever it's costing them.
Okay, Hugh, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. So is that, so this will impact people, their livability in the city?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, for Hugh's particular problem, this multi-use situation is often problematic because a lot of times they're not individually metered. So Hugh could be, you know, jumping in and out of the shower in 2 minutes, but he's being penalized for, you know, a neighbor across the hall that's running water. Yeah, that's a fish. And so, you know, SAWS has really made an effort. A lot of cities have made an effort to make sure that individual metering happens because that behavior, price behavior relationship is real. But I think this brings up a bigger issue, which is even if we assume that we need this full amount of water, who is it that's going to be paying for it? And we had a past conversation here and throughout the city about impact fees and new growth. Certainly a lot of this need is being driven by new growth. And we know that in other water supply projects that was passed on at least a portion of it through impact fees. It's important to note that through the traditional impact fee model that San Antonio's used, this will not get passed on through impact fees. All of this will be spread out through ratepayers because it doesn't include any capital costs. It's primarily O&M because we're buying, the company is taking on the capital costs. So that's rolled into the final cost. So this really does create a discussion. And you have SAWS growing, you know, we have San Antonio growing, we have SAWS talking about, you know, extending service. Part of their service area goes into Comal County. It really sort of
Yeah, they
drives,
want to become a regional provider.
Yeah,
like
really,
they want to say, hey, everybody up I-35, you need water, give me a call.
That's right. And so the question is, should existing ratepayers, you know, foot the bill, even if we did need all of this water?
But San Antonio could benefit from that, if you know, because SAWS, I mean, their profits basically go into the general fund for the city of San Antonio.
Sure, assuming they can make a profit, assuming that they can sell all this and make a profit, there will be some benefit. But that benefit will be basically people getting their, you know, existing ratepayers getting their own money back. And that's only if all of it gets sold. So, you know, there's just a lot of open-ended questions for the timeline that they have to go ahead and sign this contract.
Back to the phone lines, Jim is here. Jim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment about the cost of water, of course, is always going to increase, but it's only 10 more miles to the Gulf of Mexico. All it would include would be the cost of a desalination plant, and what we're going to do is suck the life out of the heart of Texas. Right now, it's oil. But in the future, it's going to be water. That's my comment.
Thanks for the comment, Jim. So I guess he says you look at the length to Burleson, where these wells are, and you say, well, hey, 10 more miles, you could take it to the Gulf. But would that work?
Well, technically, it would work. It's certainly possible. And I haven't seen the numbers for seawater desal lately. But the numbers are, even though it's sort of just the cost of desal, that is a very, very high number. I also think that the sort of the gravity issue of from Burleson to here versus the coast to San Antonio is slightly different. So you'd probably have a much higher energy cost in transport. But it does bring up a good question of if we drain this, what next? And so, you know, we
don't know what could happen once San Antonio starts sucking up these billions of gallons out of this aquifer.
That's right. And that's why I think continuing conservation, really figuring out how much we really need is so critical now before we buy this water and we feel like, oh, we're, you know, we have all this water. Because at some point, that also will not be enough. And at that, you know, we have an opportunity for a culture shift here. I think one of the other challenges besides fear, which we discussed, is, you know, there is a real fundamental difference in opinion in sort of what the city should look like. And is it okay to go into stage three? Or is that something from a business standpoint we should avoid, you know, forever and ever?
So you mean because right now the Edwards Aquifer Authority is in stage 4, but SAWS, we're in stage 2.
We are
because they have water banked and are able to supplement, and they're say, okay, we can cut back on our pumping. But everyone, it's like we live in a bubble, and there's not really a stage four drought right underneath your feet.
Yeah, there hasn't been. I mean, it's interesting because so much of this is driven by the fear of going into stage three and four, which we've never done. And part of that is through SAWS management. You know, whether you agree or disagree with it, that's how it's been. We haven't gone into that. Most of us are used to stage two at this point, so we could just adjust the numbers and have it be one and two. But, you know, I've heard the business community express that, you know, businesses won't want to come here if they think we're going to go into stage three and four, if they feel that looming above. I disagree with that. I think what businesses want to see is a well-organized, prepared city. And I think that we are much further ahead in that than many other Texas cities. We have a plan, and that plan has worked.
But are we getting too satisfied and other cities are catching up with their water conservation efforts?
To some extent. I mean, through necessity, other cities are having to sort of catch up.
Yeah, they're talking about, well, we got Desal coming on board here, not from the Gulf, but from a nearby aquifer that has the water that is, what is it?
Brackish.
Brackish water.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we have a pretty diversified water source. It's interesting if you look at something like Austin, where San Antonio has always been sort of billed as a scary place because all of our water comes from this aquifer. But yet you can go 70 miles up the road and all of their water comes from a surface water lake that's pretty empty right now. Well, maybe they got a little rain lately, but it hasn't been full in a while. So SAWS is actually very much further in advance than a lot of other cities.
Let's go back to the phones. There's Joe. And hey, Joe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think $3 billion, excuse the phrase, is a drop in the bucket. When you look at the consequences, what would happen if we did run out of water? You know, what's the economic impact, and especially on people's lives as well, if we ran out of water in San Antonio?
Good point, Joe. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate that. So Joe, he's looking at it. He wants to say, just give me the worst case scenario. We pass on the deal. Years down the road, we need that water. What's it do to us?
Well, first of all, let me say, I was born in San Antonio. I'm the last person that wants this town to run out of water. The question is, you can't have just that, you know, there are realities. It seems very simple. We may run out, go buy some more. But you have market pressures, you have real life groundwater pressures, that water needs to be there, where there are legal issues of whether or not it can be guaranteed to come. So you really need to make the right decision when you're trying to figure out and make sure that we're not going to run out of water. San Antonio absolutely needs more water. I'm not saying under any circumstances that we have enough forever.
But like we said, they have the desal plant that's coming on board. And we heard from Robert Puente that it looked like that was going to work for them, and I think we're set. We don't need this pipeline deal, and they were ready to just give up on it. And then there were some business forces that came a knocking, and it said, "Robert, you need to get this pipeline back on track."
That's right. I mean, there are other opportunities to get more water, and so we can expand desal in a more staged way, so that you don't have this sort of take or pay financial
source.
Impact. It's not that cheap, but
it's
not that cheap. But the nice thing about it is you can build out as you need it.
And you can turn it off and turn it on as you need
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And even if we were to do a smaller groundwater purchase that, you know, I'm not saying that groundwater isn't a good idea. The question is, do we need this much now at this price? And if we do, we really need to be talking as a community about who's going to pay for it.
Yeah. So the community aspect of that, that's critical. Is the public getting the input in this as this moves along?
You know, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people are not really aware that this is going on. When you see the level of public sort of involvement that we saw during the water management plan 2 years ago, and certainly during the impact fees, the silence that I've seen across the board on this shows me that people are not aware of what's really going on. And I think seeing a cumulative rate projection will certainly wake people up, because the rate increases, a lot of them may come later. And so if we've already signed this contract and, you know, to purchase all of this water, and then 2 years from now there's this stepped increase in front of council, and all of a sudden the public says, no, I don't want to pay these continued rate increases, we have a problem. There's a real disconnect there in the system.
Okay, Winnetka has called in. Winnetka, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Why are we, the current residents, going to have to pay this, and how can we change it to state statute or city policy to the developers and the newcomers that don't come lately? So I'm a Trump generation Texan. I don't want all these joint come lately to impose their problems on me and my lifestyle, my standard of living.
All right. Thanks for that call. We appreciate it. It's a little garbled, but she was saying, you know, why are we picking up the tab for all of this additional growth to the area?
Well, I'm not an expert in the Texas government code, but that is my understanding of where it comes from, of what in for impact fees specifically, what can be passed on to new development and what has to go to traditional ratepayers. It is somewhat vaguely worded, so it could be argued that perhaps it could go to impact fees, but traditionally we have not passed operation and maintenance fees to impact fees.
And haven't we seen already a reopening of that question of what we're going to do with impact fees? We thought we had it settled, but under the new leadership at City Hall, that's going to be revisited.
Yes, I have heard that it's going to be revisited.
Okay, so Amy Harberger, thank you so much for joining us, professor at St. Mary's University, expert on water law, and Mayor Castro's appointee to the SAW's Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. We had been talking about a water deal that SAW's is looking at that's going to be a game changer for San Antonio. It's a 16 billion gallon water deal, a $3 billion water deal, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.